Hey, everybody, welcome to the Quincast Weekly Wrap Up. Join us every week as we chat about happenings in the world of sports, entertainment, and wrestling. I'm Chrissy Rios, founder of Quinn Media, and I'm here with my co-host and co-founder, Seth Knupp. You can follow us and be a part of the daily awesome that happens on Twitter. Follow Seth at Fearless Fandom, and you can follow me at the Quinn Bee. And don't forget to follow Quinn Media to find out what the rest of the crew is up to. So, first up, let's talk about the bad news of the week. Philip Seymour Hoffman. What's your thoughts on that, Seth?
Well, obviously it's sad anytime you know, somebody goes that way with kids and everything else. I tend to think that just because it's an actor, we shouldn't make, you know, a mountain out of a molehill. People die like that every day in this world and everything else. But the truth is, I kind of had a soft spot in my heart for this guy. He's in a lot of movies that I really like him in. He was a great actor. I know he was also really good on the stage. Obviously, living in Madison, Wisconsin, I never got to see him do anything. But, you know, it's tragic. It's sad. But like I said, I like to remember that, you know, he gave us a lot of great entertainment during his life. So,
yeah, what would you say your favorite movie that he performed in was for you?
I'm going to say it wrong because I always do, but Schenectady, New York, Schenectady, however you want to say it. It was written and directed by Charlie Kaufman, who I absolutely love everything he's ever done. And it's a pretty crazy movie. It's very, very abstract. He's like a playwright who is writing a play, and all of a sudden he starts to decide to like live what he's writing. And then that starts to become his life. And then he writes on top of that, and they build this set in this huge, warehouse type place that becomes a real place. It's just, it's very trippy, very layered movie. And he was the main character, which he very rarely was in his movies. I think the only one that comes to mind where he was the main character is Capote, which is what he won the Oscar for. And that movie's great as well.
Yeah, I've not seen either one of those, oddly, or, well, knowing me, not oddly. I have to say probably my favorite with him is The Talented Mr. Ripley. I don't know why, but that one is the role that I just absolutely loved. He was kind of an asshole, but he was spot on with knowing something wasn't right. And I loved him in that role. And I really also enjoyed his role in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah. That part was one of his really early movies, and it's kind of small, kind of not. I mean, he was a side character, but the butler character or servant, whatever he was, he played it perfect. One of the most memorable moments in that entire movie for me, it actually involves him when the dude first comes out of the house and he meets Bunny, and she's sitting in the sun chair, you know, and she tells dude to blow on her toenails, and Brant just seems so like uncomfortable being there, and he's got this big goofy grin on his face, and he's just kind of rocking back and forth, and like, we all love her. And anyway, he's really funny in that movie in a smaller role, and he really showed what he was going to be able to do later in his film career, in my opinion.
Yeah, he was. I enjoy him a lot. I really do. But again, you know, it's sad, but you know, life goes on, and we get to talk about really fun and exciting things like Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. What do you think about that?
I love it, and I actually think it's hilarious how the internet blew up about it right away. They did the same thing when Ben Affleck was cast, but as details have come out about the suit and as Kevin Smith has really taken to support Ben, which of course he was gonna, people have kind of backed off the Ben Affleck as a bad decision, and I think people are gonna back off of this as a bad decision too, once they really start to back up and realize what Jesse Eisenberg is as an actor. He's a quality actor. And actually, one of the first things I tweeted out was to Michael Rosenbaum, who played Lex Luthor in the Smallville series, essentially saying how much they resemble each other, because they really do. Once if you look at Jesse Eisenberg as a bald, you know, in your head as a bald guy, they really do resemble each other, and I think the character is gonna be perfect. I'm actually a lot more excited. You know, honestly, I think they've made brilliant casting decisions for this movie so far, minus Gal Gadot, and I'll argue that all day long. I think she's totally wrong for Wonder Woman, but we'll stay on the Jesse Eisenberg topic.
I am admittedly a huge, huge fan of Jesse Eisenberg playing this role. I think it's going to be amazing and brilliant. I wish I could attach myself to Ben Affleck as Batman, but I'm not there. I'm probably not going to be there until the movie comes out and the fangirl in me will take over and I'll be okay with it. But I don't know. I think that it's a great decision. I do see the resemblance now in my head as you've kind of said it. And I thought about the two as you were talking about it, and it's definitely there. And Jesse's a really strong, like you mentioned, he's a really strong actor and he's quality. I think it's going to be an amazing, amazing portrayal. So I too am very excited about it.
Yeah, I think this cast is really going to surprise people. I think they're going to come out and they have extra time to work on this movie now. And I think it's, you know, people are going to expect what they got with the Avengers to an extent. I know anybody who's familiar with the DC universe and what they've done in Man of Steel and the Batman trilogy that Christopher Nolan did, they've gone kind of a darker route, but I still think that there's going to be a bit of impressed that people are going to come out of the theater with after this movie finally comes out and the subsequent movies, because they've already said that they're moving forward with a bigger picture DC universe. But the cast that they are assembling is going to be very powerful and be able to put on some serious performances, whereas, you know, the Marvel is just boom, explosion, and that's pretty much what they go on, and that's fine. That's they survive there, and their movies are good. I don't bag on the Marvel movies, but I think that there's going to be some surprise performances that come out of this series of movies.
Do you mean in the way of spin-offs, kind of in the same Hulk, Iron Man, you know, Avengers sort of break off? Well, I guess they came after, didn't they? But is that what you're kind of expecting will happen, or?
Well, I mean, there's already plans for some of the movies. I mean, Gail actually signed for 3 movies, so you can just assume that she'll do the Man of Steel sequel, and then a Wonder Woman movie, and then a Justice League movie. I mean, that's what they're obviously building towards. I'm sure that there's news out there for other movies. Honestly, right now, off the top of my head, I don't know what else is in production or in the works for that universe. But and then we'll just see how much they want to tie in the TV universe. There's been talks of Stephen Amell playing the Green Arrow in a Justice League movie because he's established himself so well in the Arrow show. And now they have The Flash coming out soon, and there's talks of other shows. So we'll see how it all works out. But I just meant in general, I think that the actors are going to put on top-notch performances. You know, one of the things I said right off the bat to one of my coworkers when I was reading the news was, I'm sure all these people on the internet right now that are bagging on Jesse Eisenberg as a casting decision all knew that Heath Ledger was going to just kill the Joker character and you know, knock it out of the park the way he did. Obviously, I'm being totally sarcastic. Nobody, you know, people bagged on that casting decision too. So I personally expect something similar here. I expect Jesse Eisenberg to really prove everybody wrong. But that's my take on it.
Yeah, I agree. I remember the backlash of Heath Ledger taking on the role and people thinking it was such a poor decision. And Looking back, and you know that I'm a major fan of that movie. I watch it still at least once a month, and it is his Joker portrayal is something I don't think, even if they put a Joker in the Justice League, when that does finally come to fruition, I don't think that anything will top the Ledger portrayal. And I foresee the same thing with Jesse Eisenberg with this Lex Luthor.
See, and I don't think you can say that. People said the same thing about Jack, which is why nobody wanted anybody to get out of or play him, and they thought Heath Ledger was a bad decision because Jack Nicholson had, set the standard for what Joker was, and I think that's unfair. Just like in comic books, the comic book movies themselves can create different characters or different versions of the same character, and that's up to the actors to take on their own and create that version of the character. I mean, comic book series, they don't all function on the same, the character's always the same all the time. So movies shouldn't be held to that standard either. It's just a matter of whether or not the actor owns the character and portrays, something that you want to see come out of that character. Everything else is up to the writing, whether or not they get it right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I guess it's I'm partial, obviously, in that, portrayal, and so therefore I guess, I'll be that girl that's kind of, totally just beating the crap out of the next Joker because I just can't see the measure up. And much like you're saying with people that they did with the whole, Heath and the portrayal of Jack, and I got that. I saw that. I was on board with Ledger from the beginning, so I didn't really have the same feelings, but I think I'll be on the other side now when it does flip. So I get it. I agree with you. I just, we all have, I guess, that favorite person that portrays a role. So, I don't know that anybody really could say much on Lex Luthor. I can't even remember who played the last one outside of Smallville in the
Kevin
movie.
Spacey.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. See, so it clearly didn't stand out as much to me, but I'm sure there are people who are hating Jesse for a lot of other reasons, and I feel like it's a lot of it has to do with, I think that it's the look. I feel like they are giving him not as much credit because he doesn't have that portrayal of somebody maybe who's older or what they think Lex Luthor should look like. Because
Which
it seems.
is ridiculous to me because he's 30 years old and so is Henry Cavill. They're the exact same age, and as the story is supposed to go, I mean that's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be peers. They're supposed to be peers. They went to school together, blah blah blah. Anyway, point is, I think it's gonna work, and that's my rubber stamp of approval right there.
All right, well, then we'll put it in the books as such. So I really want to talk about the worst, and if we can transition out, of movies, if you don't mind, I'd love to talk about the worst Super Bowl in the history of all Super Bowls.
I think that's absolutely ridiculous. It has nothing to do with a personal bet or anything like that. I think to brand it the worst Super Bowl completely takes away from the fact that Seattle's defense is absolutely amazing. And just because Peyton Manning didn't score a bunch of touchdowns doesn't mean it's not a good Super Bowl. I understand that when you get to the championship game, everybody wants, a game. It's supposed to come down to the fourth quarter where they're both fighting for it because they're the two best teams. But honestly, there was nobody in the AFC that was going to contend with Seattle's defense. And that's, I mean, you can go up and down, and there isn't a single team. If Peyton Manning and those wide receivers can't do it, there's no way that anybody else could have. So, in my opinion, I thought the writing was on the wall going in. That defense is way too good, and despite the fact that in today's NFL it's all about scoring and passing and everything else, the truth is defense still wins championships, and this year proved it. Last year proved it. No one would say Joe Flacco is the greatest quarterback in the league, but you had two teams with great defenses playing in that Super Bowl. I hate to brand it a bad game just because the score was lopsided, because that really does take away from the accomplishments of the Seattle defense and how good they really are.
As the fantasy team owner of the Seattle Seahawks, I'm not saying their defense was bad. I will admit they carried me and kept me not being the worst in the league. But I have to say it was hard to watch, because when it started out and in 12 seconds you had a safety, you kind of saw that the game was going to be rough, and it just seemed like Denver never got into the flow of things, and it was really tough to watch.
I mean, coming out of halftime, I still thought they had a chance. You got to think they still have Peyton Manning, they still have those wide receivers, they still have a solid running game, and they can score points. So even coming out of halftime, I still thought they had a chance until Percy Harvin ran that kickoff back. They were still in the game. They still could have won. But once that happened, that's when the game really ended. Like right after halftime, the game was over.
Exactly. I mean, I'm one of those that I'll stick it out, and I watched all the way through. I didn't change the channel. I stayed on board. And even though I knew by the time the fourth quarter came, this game was not only over, it was buried and tucked away, I still, kind of gave hope that they'd at least put some points on the board. They'd do a little bit more. It just seemed like they were completely out of sync. It just never really came together, and it was tough. It was really tough to watch. And as I am a Manning fan, and that doesn't ever go unspoken with me. And as a fan of his, it was really difficult to see him just so off his game. But it wasn't just him. It wasn't just him. I mean, his offensive line was completely invisible. And not taking away from Seattle, because they were clearly just, they were on their game 100%, but it was just almost as if Peyton was out there by himself. And it was really, really, really just, it was frustrating as a fan of him to watch.
Yeah. I mean, that all of that needs to be credited to the defense of the Seattle Seahawks. They kept the wide receivers from getting open. They kept them from being able to run their routes. Their defensive line is that damn good. Their linebackers are that good that he had no options through the majority of the game. You got to give credit to the defense, and you have to have a Bella picture as your Twitter photo for the rest of the week.
I'm counting it down. I have an expiration time stamped. Sunday at 9:25, that thing is gone. It is, of all the pictures, I really thought you were going to give me the balding Manning picture. I would have bet that was the picture. So I'm kind of glad I didn't take a sub bet anywhere, because God only knows what else I'd have to put on my Twitter page. It's not fun at all. But I have to say, during last night's Raw, I got like 20 new fans, and I almost feel like that picture was the reason.
It's possible.
I feel like it was. I'm not keeping it, but I felt like it might have been it. I was so close to believing that could have been it, because it was very unusual to have it happen. And only during Monday Night Raw. I have not really had anything, happen since. So who knows? Maybe that was the magic pill there. But yeah, I'm very ready for it to go down, because the Seattle outfit, and I am not a fan of the Bella Show like you are. I don't watch it as, diligently as you do. I know you're a huge fan, and the divas are your thing, and I get that. And
yeah, I'm totally cutting all of that.
All right, let's go to, I have to talk about the coin toss. I have to. I have to.
Hold on. I have to say this. When I was watching the pregame stuff, and I had all the hype on all day on the TV while I was doing other stuff around the house. But as soon as I saw Joe Namath walking around in a fur coat, I knew there was going to be trouble. And I think Terry Bradshaw asked him if he wished it was Aaron Andrews interviewing him. And it just brought me back to that Monday Night Football game where he leaned in. And I think it was Susie Colbert. I could be wrong on that. I'm sure somebody will tell me. But when he leaned in and asked her if she wanted any sugar. And he's just, that dude is crazy, and he should have been nowhere near that game. I don't know who decided that it was a good idea to have him involved, but yeah, he botched the coin toss, and that's
Oh,
just, it's ridiculous.
it was so it was so funny, but what a great I was so impressed by the ref that he was so on it and caught that
He's like, hey,
coin. Whoa. When I saw him catch it too, I turned and I said to Jay, like, hey, I'm pretty sure that nobody called heads or tails. And he said, no, somebody did. I was like, no, I don't think so. And then when that was what it was, I was like, oh my gosh, why are they letting this guy do this? This is bad. And then, of course, the internet went bananas on the coat. Like, Twitter was alive with that coat and every monkey picture that they could find.
It was an awesome coat. The
It
coat was
was
awesome.
the farthest thing from awesome.
Oh,
It was
it was amazing. And the
awful.
fact that he had the balls to wear something like that during the Super Bowl. I mean, you gotta know if you're gonna wear something like that during the Super Bowl. A, you're gonna get a lot of hate for your fashion sense, and B, you're gonna have PETA just on your nuts the minute that they see it. So he knew he was gonna take a ton of heat for wearing it, and yet he wore it and he pulled it off and he smiled the whole time. And no, I love Joe Namath, but he shouldn't have been anywhere near that game. Just nowhere near a coin toss.
Yeah, I have to say that I don't think we'll ever see it happen again.
Oh
I
no,
think
I'm sure we
that
will. I beg to differ. That's hilarity. I mean, how much chatter and traffic do they get just from him and his little amount of time on the TV? No, you can't pass up on that, man. That dude is gold.
know. I'm gonna take that bet and say we don't see it again.
Well, we'll see.
I'm putting it out there now. It's unlikely we'll
Well,
ever
the
see
only
that.
reason he was there is because he was a Jets quarterback who won a Super Bowl. So it's not, I mean, it was in New York or New Jersey, whatever. So it wasn't like he was just a random guy that they picked to do it. He had a reason to be there. So yeah, we won't see him again. And I mean, anywhere else. It's not like he's gonna, go to New Orleans to flip a coin.
No, he's I don't think he'll be doing it even if it is in New York again. I think that ship has finally sailed and it is gone. All right, I'm done with Joe. Let's move on. How about we talk about commercials? What was your favorite and what was your most hated?
First off, I just gotta say that this Super Bowl, that they've continued to go downhill. I think people are expecting so much from the commercials now that they just never live up to it. But this year there were very few that really stood out at all. I had to really struggle to come up with any that I actually liked. I did think that the Radio Shack commercial that had Hulk Hogan and Sergeant Slaughter in it, I thought that was pretty cool. But obviously, only because I'm such a wrestling mark and those two guys are awesome. And then the Toyota commercial where they put Terry Crews in it. And I had to send something out on Twitter basically saying that if you want to have a good commercial during, a funny commercial, a Super Bowl worthy commercial, you need to have Terry Crews in it. Like I think every commercial during the Super Bowl for every company should have had Terry Crews in it, and they all would have been winners.
Yeah, you expressed that very clearly. I did see
Yeah, because he
that.
was awesome. I mean, he's hilarious. But and then as far as ones I didn't like, pretty much every other commercial. But a few that I really hated, the Bud Light ones that they built up for like 3 weeks. The payoff was so ridiculously lame. To only have two commercials to pay it off, they should have had them all the way up until the fourth quarter paying it off. And then there was one, I believe it was a Volkswagen. It may have been Audi,
It was
but
Volkswagen. I know
okay,
which one you're talking about.
where the Germans got their wings. I just dude, really? Germans getting wings? I mean that's going somewhere that I just
Here.
that talk about having balls. Maybe Joe Namath made that commercial.
Here's the funny part, though, is that commercial, after the Super Bowl, they have a committee that comes together. This is legit. They come together, it's an ad agency, and they rate which ones were the most effective. And that one was in the top three as the most effective
Interesting.
sale that will get sales, that will see a return. And I was thinking to myself, how? That was one of my, I just absolutely didn't like it at all.
Well, I think if you're not trying to be glib like I am, I mean, obviously I'm making a joke. It did have comedic value, and at the end when they talk about the rainbows coming out of their butts, that was kind of funny. So I can understand it. But they did effectively sell their car too. It wasn't just like the Maserati commercial where they talked about being powerful, and it sounded like something that came out of an anarchist group, like an anarchist manifesto, but it was for a Maserati. Like, I don't know how you're selling a Maserati with that commercial. So
And
at least,
that one
yeah.
scored poorly with
Yeah,
this group. It
exactly.
was very high. It was the lowest
And
one actually.
the Volkswagen, they actually promoted their car, which they do very well overall. I mean, they're very good with their ads, in my opinion. Yeah, that was my. And then there was a Hyundai one where I liked it and I liked it and I liked it. It was a dad continually saving his son from stuff like falling into the grill and stuff like that. And then in the end, they're driving and the dad's not paying attention and the car beeps when he's going to hit somebody. And it was like, if only dad could take care of you this well or something like that. So basically making a correlation between technology taking over parenting, and that really rubbed me the wrong way. But that's a personal thing, I guess. I don't know. It
Yeah,
just
I don't even remember
that
that
one
one.
bugged me. Yeah, see, it wasn't even memorable, I guess.
I honestly, I'm trying to picture it, but I don't remember. And I didn't really get up and walk away too much because,
Obviously, yeah.
that's one of the, it's, this is the one time where it's like, use the bathroom before you, before the game
Right.
starts, because you are in for the next 3.5, 4 hours. So I
Or
don't.
use the bathroom during the game and then come back for the commercials because of how bad it
Yeah,
is,
well,
right?
that did happen actually.
And I wanted to say, I thought Fox did a pretty good job of the 24 teasers for the return of 24.
Absolutely, they did.
Yeah, I enjoyed how they kept like showing parts of a scene, but it was just a little like a cropped out image of it. I thought that was brilliant because you had no idea what it was you were seeing until you could hear the beep like on the second to last one. And then I was like, oh, that's for 24. And that got me really
Yeah.
excited. But then the last full size commercial they did that actually showed the British car, bus, whatever it was getting shot at, then I was like, oh, they ruined it.
It did though. It was kind of a moment too here where it was like, oh my God, it's 24, and we were all, there was the excitement. But it was too on the internet. I saw Twitter kind of got really jazzed about it. So I think that they were
Right.
all, in the same place as everybody
Right.
else. Like, man, that's awesome. And yeah, it was a good one. I was glad to see the way they handled it. I did think it was handled very well. Even through the end, I'll say I was in all the way.
And
I didn't jump ship on the last commercial. Like, oh, I was there.
one last thing. The trailer that they did at the very beginning for Need for Speed. All right, I'm just gonna put a disclaimer out there and say I enjoy movies with fast cars. So that's already out there. And I enjoy Need for Speed as a gaming series. I don't expect much from the movie. I don't think it's going to win awards or anything, but I loved their trailer that they put in for their Super Bowl trailer because it was just one after the other. It was just a car driving fast. It wasn't trying to show the actors because there really are no name actors in it. It wasn't trying to tell what the plot's going to be because the plot is probably going to be very thin. It was just cars driving fast, and that's all it was. And they just showed you that this movie is going to be about cars going fast and looking badass. And that was good enough for me because that's how you sell your product. You know what your product is, you know who your audience is, and you go at it from that angle. And I thought they did a fantastic job.
And on that, I have to say the same. I love that game. I play it. And it's when I saw the side of the road before they even really like showed the car, when they showed kind of the roadside, the first thing I said was, that looks just like Need for Speed. And then it started to go, and I was like, oh my God. And then of course, I kind of got all giddy. And then when I saw it on the billboard, because it, had the logo on the billboard, I was so jazzed. I was all in. It was pretty much just give me the Fandango, I'll buy the tickets, and I don't mean the wrestler.
I do like that it appears from the tr all the different trailers I've seen leading up to it that they're gonna like they use a lot of camera angles that they use in the cinematic elements for the game.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Oh, me too. It was very, and I like when I can relate it. And as soon as I saw, like I said, as soon as I saw it, I knew it. I recognized it. So I think that it's really smart for them to do it that way too. And especially they do have a pretty strong core audience
Yes.
of people who love that game. So it was brilliant on their behalf as well. I agree 100%.
And I'm just gonna say also that not to go back to famous people's deaths or anything, but there's one more Fast and Furious to come out, and I don't know how well it's gonna be done or what's gonna happen with Paul Walker and everything else. But I think that this series will actually pick up the slack from the audience that will lose that series, because I believe that series was going to their last movie anyway. But it's obviously gonna come to an end or at least be different now. And I think if they can capitalize, the Need for Speed franchise can kind of take over that audience, because there's always an audience of people that want to see beautiful cars go really fast and do crazy things. I mean, that's been around as long as cars have been around.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a brilliant marriage. I mean, in this scenario specifically, having it be a video game that is so popular and has such a strong fan base, and then turning it into a movie where there will, as you said, now be a new kind of opening. It's perfectly gonna slide right in as, I see it. I think I hope it's gonna be good because I like the franchise. So
Right.
I'm all in. I have to say, and I know a lot of people didn't like it, but I was a big fan of the Timmy Tebow commercials. I thought that they were hysterical for T-Mobile. I loved that he played up and kind of made light of the fact that he doesn't have a contract. We were joking with the fact that, he can't play football. Well, he can't play football on Earth, but he can play it on the moon. And it was, I thought those were extremely well done. And I was glad to see him make light of it because, he does get a lot of slack. He does get poked fun at a lot. And so I thought it was good for him to kind of turn the tables and be funny and show that he's taking it all as what it is. All right, I'm gonna segue out of this because I can tell you're done with my commercial updates. Let's talk about Raw, shall we?
Sure.
Awesome. All right. Again, crowd interaction, awful. It's kind of becoming a Monday night phenomenon.
It's where they are. They're in the Midwestern states right now. This week was Omaha, last week was Cleveland. I mean, you're just not going to get much response from those places. They don't they're the way I see it is, if you go to Chicago or you go to Philadelphia or you go to New York, first of all, if you go on the East Coast anywhere, those places have, independent wrestling still to this day regularly, where they sell out independent shows. So when the big boys come around, the people that are going are the people that make a point to be there because they're wrestling fans. When you're in Omaha, chances are they probably had to give some tickets away. You get people that are going because it's something to do with the family. It's just a different breed of fan. It's that Midwestern family fan that they're going with, going after with the John Cenas and the Sheamuses of the world. So it's what's to be expected. I gotta say, my disappointment in it was with everything going on right now, that they couldn't pull their shit together for one show. But like I said, it's where they are. I'm still waiting for the March, is it 3rd? March 3rd?
It is.
Yeah, that's if this situation with CM Punk is still what it is, that show is gonna be Ridiculous. And if they're legitimately taking signs from people, which it sounds like that part is true. I have read today that the stuff about them actually kicking people out wasn't true.
Wait, I didn't hear about that.
Oh, well, allegedly some people went to Twitter and said that they had been kicked out for chanting CM Punk's name during the
I'm
show.
sorry, yes. Okay. I thought you meant for signs. I was.
No. For the actual chanting getting kicked out. I guess today the reports are that didn't happen. Whether or not it did, obviously only a few people actually know. But the sign confiscation thing, I can see that being a very serious issue getting to Chicago.
Oh.
Because the amount of signs that would come into that show and the people that are going to be willing to forcibly defend those signs could turn into a serious PR issue. And obviously that entire show will be hijacked as no other show could be. I just think all you have to do is watch Money in the Bank from 2011 to have an idea of what that crowd is capable of in regards to CM Punk.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that if they try to take signs, I look at the guy that was on Monday night this past week. You know, he turned the tables on them. They took a sign.
Had another
He
sign.
drafted up another one. You know, and I can't imagine that they would not expect that now to be a thing, because this guy, I don't know if you know, he started a Twitter account
I
today.
saw it. Yeah, I
I thought
saw
that
it.
was great. He's Twitter famous for being the sign guy, but I mean, truth be told, it was really, I thought it was great on his behalf that he did do it, because it is BS if they are taking the sign. Well, they are, obviously, and it's BS. They shouldn't do that. It's kind of, I don't understand it. I know that they want to control aspects of what's shown, you know, in the shows, but it's just something I can't wrap my head around, and I don't think that they will get away with it at all in Chicago. As a matter of fact, I know they wouldn't, and I cannot wait to be there. I'm so excited for that show, especially now with, you know, the way things are in the stories, and you know, this whole back scene. Because it does seem way legit now to me. I mean, I was waiting for Monday to see if it was going to be. I kind of was still almost expecting, and like we talked about last week, hoping in a way that it would be a story so that I knew he was coming back, but I really just feel now that it's not.
You know, even if it is, at this point, they're doing a good enough job of hiding it, that they're going to continue to hide it. They're going to continue to do their thing. But at this point, I can almost guarantee it's not, because they've removed him from the app picture. You know, his picture was up on the app home screen, and now that's gone. They took him out of the opening signature, which I noticed right away. And then when they did the WWE Network promo where they showed the countdown show, they took him out of that too. So they've been doing a lot of editing preparing for these shows to remove him. I hate to say giving him the Chris Benoit treatment, but you know, it kind of feels that way at this point. And the sick part is what kills me about it is I feel like they should be trying to create a bridge, not burn the shit out of it. And especially in the case of CM Punk and everything that he cried foul on the first time when he almost left, you know, getting on the signature and being pushed and into the public and everything else, to really burn that now, to me, shows that they have no intention of bringing him back. And all the people still holding out hope that he'll be back before Mania and everything else, I'm starting to think that that's absolutely ridiculous. Because if you're a fan of CM Punk and you believe in him as a person, not just a character on TV, then the fact of the matter is once they start burning those bridges, he has no interest in coming back to something like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I it is unfortunate the way it's being handled, and you know, I kind of, I hate to say it too, but I do agree with you that it is kind of the Benoit treatment. And it's, I think they also removed him from all of the WrestleMania promo stuff too.
Right. And clearly, I just got to say this, clearly it's a completely different situation.
Well, no, for of
I
course.
mean, you know, but still, just the point to be made that they're removing him from everything they possibly can. They're scrubbing their hands of him, as it were. And I don't like that. But that's the WWE. That's how they function. They're not going to continue to push him as a star and everything else if they're not going to be able to make the money off of him on a daily basis. And I get it. It's a business thing. That's what they're there for. But we should probably just talk about the actual show.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I was going to go to that because it does kind of, this does roll into the opening sequence too, with
Right.
Stephanie and you know, Triple H and that whole, you know, the backing of now Daniel and being the biggest advocates for him. And it seemed
Which
like a
is,
royal FU to me.
well, it was total. I mean, Triple H leading a yes chant, if you don't see that as total bullshit, then you're not watching this show every week, because they've buried him on a personal level and on a professional level week after week. And that's why the fans are so behind him to give him the push, because of how Hunter personally has buried Daniel Bryan. And they're going to continue to bury him. I don't buy this for a second that they're gonna push him, you know, to the top or anything just because the fans are telling them to. And it was I want to make sure I give them a shout out, because I think I messed it up on Twitter and they got kind of angry at me. So if they do hear this, the people at the RCWR show tweeted out that they felt that Stephanie was talking directly to CM Punk in that opening promo. And I totally agreed with that. I felt like it was very much a message into the TV for him to hear, not so much talking to Randy. And you know, they're gonna do that. And they did it a couple other times. You know, when The Miz came out, everyone was like, what the hell was that all about? That was totally a shot at CM Punk. It was also a thing where The Miz and CM Punk were scheduled to go on the At Midnight show on Comedy Central. And that, I think that's next week. I'm not sure on the date. They were scheduled to go on together. CM Punk is actually still scheduled to be on the show, but they pulled The Miz.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So what I think happened here is that they pulled The Miz because they don't want Punk to be associated as a WWE superstar. So I'm actually kind of interested to see how that plays out. I do not watch the At Midnight show. It's Chris Hardwick, which I should be watching it because I like Chris Hardwick. I love what he does with The Talking Dead, but I'm and The Nerdist, obviously. So I'm probably going to be watching that and hoping that, you know, they actually do get CM Punk to show up and actually talk, because at this point, that's all been completely silent. So yeah, so that was that, and it does roll into it. And it, you know, us sitting here talking about it instead of the actual Raw show actually proves a point, and it's that no matter what they're doing right now, it is completely overshadowed by what's going on in air quotes here, real life, with a superstar who, in my opinion, was at the very top of their business.
Yeah. Oh, it's, I mean, even, you know, when it, even when the show is on, it doesn't stop. You know,
Right.
it's all over, you know, the interwebs are definitely alive with the chatter about it, and it's proving the point to what you just said. You know, it doesn't matter what they're doing on the show right now, and their push for, you know, pushing up Daniel was, I think, you know, they were doing it to try to kind of regain that massive crowd control.
Absolutely.
And it really still isn't sticking.
Well, once again, we'll go back to the fact that the crowd last night was pretty pathetic. And despite their ineptness, they were still able to pull off, I think, 6 or 7 different CM Punk chants during the show. I got to give WWE credit because they do want to sweep this under the rug. They do want this to not be part of their entertainment. And when Randy came out for that opening segment, he knew they were going to do it. He was probably told behind the curtain that it was going to happen. And he came out talking faster than I've ever seen Randy Orton talk. And he didn't stop. You know, Randy is famous for his pauses. And he never paused through his entire promo. And you could see his face getting red and his veins popping out because he had to keep talking until the crowd stopped chanting. And then when Stephanie came out, they booed and then they started chanting CM Punk. And she didn't break. She took no pauses. She just went right through her promo to talk over him. And then at two different times, I noticed when the crowd started that Michael Cole, who's a consummate professional, just talked over the crowd, which he does anyway. But, you know, a lot of times they make mention of the crowd and their chants, but they certainly did not last night. And they also did a really good job of ignoring the fact that We Want Punk, hashtag We Want Punk, was the number one trending thing for a long time. And they just, you know, they ignored it.
Yeah, because they do always talk about what's the
What's
trending.
trending?
Yeah. So, no, I agree with you. They did a good job of
They did a good job,
not
but
acknowledging it.
here's my problem with it. As good of a job as they did, there's a percentage of their fan base that they're really giving the finger to. Because by ignoring it, they're saying, we don't care what you're saying. And this is what people were upset with the Daniel Bryan thing. The fans made it clear that Daniel Bryan was who they want. That's who they want at the top. That's who they wanted in the Rumble. And when it didn't happen, they made it clear that they were unhappy and they felt like they were being ignored. And they still feel that. And they still feel like as a fan base, they're getting the finger from Triple H and Stephanie. And to be honest, this is just more of that. And that's the only thing, me just saying that out loud leads me to the only way that I possibly see this being an angle is that they're really, really, really building Stephanie and Triple H up as horrible, horrible heels. The problem is they're not really doing that on TV. They're, you know, they don't come off extremely heelish, you know, every show. They're not building it on TV. This week they turned around and like I said, and like we talked about, Triple H did the yes chant, but and then they didn't show up the rest of the show either. And if they're gonna build any momentum, they have to be in more than one segment.
Yeah, I agree. And that I will say was what I noticed, and what again, where my takeaway was maybe this isn't, it isn't a storyline, because if they would have come out and they would have, somehow just kind of tossed more of themselves out there and really gotten ugly, but they're, it's almost like there's a strong start to be ugly and then they don't follow it up. It kind of gets lost and
And that's why you can have no faith in their writing right now and what they're doing. They have no direction. You can argue up and down about who should be wrestling who and who should be a heel and you know, those are all opinions. You know, I love Dolph Ziggler and that's great. But in the end, the way I judge it is whether or not there's actually, you know, quality storytelling going on. And right now, to be honest, I don't feel like there are any good stories at all. Just none. The only possibility of a good story right now is the Wyatts because Bray is so charismatic with his character. But they can't turn it into anything. Like, it just kind of sits there. He cuts awesome promos, and they have nothing to do with it. Like, you know, this week they had to wrestle the Shield, and it's like, who cares? We all know the Shield's gonna break up. Like, that's done. We all know that. That's already been shown
yeah.
that it's gonna happen. So we know it's a nothing feud, and I just their writing and everything is just going nowhere. There's really nothing else to say about it, in my opinion.
No, I'm with you there. One other thing I want to talk about that really didn't get talked about, and it just I don't, and maybe it didn't, I missed it on the show, but the Cena injury.
No, they didn't talk about that at all. They've ignored that completely.
I don't really still even know what happened.
He got poked in the eye.
Wait, are you,
No, like
is that
he got,
legit?
yeah, no, he got poked in the eye, and I guess it did some serious damage. Dude, getting poked in the eye can really suck. Like you can cut your eye pretty
I'm
bad.
not arguing
But
that, but
allegedly, and I read this right before we started recording, actually, that the main event for next Monday is going to be Randy versus Cena. So he is coming back. He's not, and that's probably why they didn't mention it, because it's not something that anybody, it wasn't a concern. And to say something about it would be, counterproductive if they're just going to bring him back next week anyway.
okay, that makes sense. I didn't even know what it was. I'll admit, I am still chuckling. It's an I know it can be serious, but it is kind
Yeah.
of funny because it's like this is the most accident-prone wrestler on the planet, and it's the weirdest shit every time. Like he's gonna
Well,
have turf toe next. I'm convinced. Like that's what he's going down with.
I don't root for John Cena's character, but to be fair, the guy does, wrestle a completely full schedule, and he has for years. So things happen. Bad things happen when you're on that kind of schedule.
All right, so do you have any predictions for the next show? I want to try to start keeping note of these and seeing how on target.
You want a prediction? My prediction is that the road to WrestleMania will continue to suck. Because for a WrestleMania build, I was so excited going into the Royal Rumble. I was like, this was me. Oh man, this Royal Rumble is gonna build to the greatest WrestleMania of all time. The card looks so amazing, and it's gonna be so awesome, and the next 2 months are gonna be so great, and they're not. They're not, they're horrible. They're bad crowd. If you're gonna schedule a Midwest trip where the crowds are gonna be dead, don't do it between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Those should all be hot crowds every night because you need that momentum.
Well, I agree, but it looks like they're trying to build it, and I get what you're saying, but it looks like the second half,
Yeah, no, yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. When Elimination Chamber is in Minneapolis, which I don't know if that crowd will be good. I'm kind of hoping to still be there. And then when they go back to Green Bay, which is funny because when I went to Green Bay a few months ago, they said it was the first time Raw had been there in like 7 years, and they're gonna go twice in like 5 months, 6 months, and then they go to Milwaukee, which for SmackDown, so whatever, and then. Then they do the Chicago, and I can't rattle off what's after that, but I think you're right. I think it looks like they're gonna build the second half of it after Elimination Chamber going into WrestleMania will be hotter crowds. And the crowds will get more pumped for WrestleMania, and the stories will become more clear. But I don't know what to expect. I'm sure we'll get Batista and more really expensive denim. Because that seems to be a thing right now.
he's working the pit bull look. That is for sure.
Let's see. No, that's pretty much it. That's my go-to move right now is Batista will come out wearing denim.
I have a feeling you're gonna score very well with that one. He will wear denim. He will continue this awful shaved head look, and he will have the Armani sunglasses
Yeah,
without a doubt.
and I'm sure Randy Orton is going to continue to be a crybaby, and they're going to use that to kind of poke at CM Punk, and they're going to continue to bury Xavier Woods.
Yeah, that's I'm not a big fan of that storyline at all. I want to see him do so much more, and I love the fact that he's going to school. I wish they'd stop playing it up so much because it does make it seem like he's not in it for the long haul.
Right.
And it kind of seems like they're trying to almost bury his character before it really takes off. Because every time they talk about it, I mean, they don't ever fail to not mention it.
Right.
It gets mentioned in every show, and it's a great thing he's doing. I mean, I'm on board for everything he's going for, but I think it just kind of keeps suggesting he's getting his PhD and then he's out.
Right.
gonna bail and he's gonna go do this thing. And it doesn't help build a fan base when you're basically telling fans, you may not be here. Don't expect it. So don't get too attached. Like, it's being poorly handled, in my opinion. Maybe that's more just how I'm viewing it, but it's just kind of been the vibe I've gotten from it since they brought it up on every Monday Night Raw.
I've got a prediction that
Okay.
just popped into my head.
Okay.
Brock Lesnar is gonna attempt to attack Betty White.
Oh, I forgot she was hosting. Yeah.
Heyman is gonna come out and talk shit about Betty White, and Lesnar's gonna come after her,
Oh,
and
God.
someone will stop him.
Oh, God.
Hopefully it's Super Cena.
I am not even going to touch this prediction. If it happens, I will be the first person to do a complete bow and say you are awesome. But I have a feeling this one might not miss it. It's going to miss the mark. It's
All right, we'll
a little
see.
off.
We'll see.
All right, we will. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we sign off?
I'm good.
All right, well then let's wrap it up. I want to say thanks to my co-host, Seth Knupp. I am Chrissy Rios. And remember, you can follow us both on Twitter at Fearless Fandom and The Quinn Bee. Also, we will respond to any questions and comments or thoughts on the show. Just hit us up on Twitter at Quinn Media and use hashtag QuinnCast. Thanks for joining us and tune in next week for another QuinnCast weekly wrap-up.
And we're on iTunes now.
We are.